हरि धाम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So in section 3, Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics as presented by Sukadev Goswami, 56 to 58. Summary of text 56. As opposed to using the individual's internal experience, Vyasti, as a basis for understanding Brahman, Najiva Goswami uses individual's experience of the external world, Samasti, to establish the same thing. 56. 56.1. Thus, the essential identity of the jivas, who are constituted as described above, is purely spiritual. The tattva, the absolute truth, has been described as being non-different from the jivas because it shares with them the same spiritual constitution and is the whole of which they are integral parts. This is the way of describing the tattva in terms of vyasti, the individual beings. This tattva called the shelter, ashraya, can also be defined in another way in terms of samasti, the totality of existence. On this point, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan remarks, in order to explain knowledge of the Lord, knowledge of the surup of jiva has just been explained. Similarly, one can use similar inferences to determine the surup of the Lord. It was previously concluded that the surupa of the jiva is consciousness and having awareness of other objects. The jiva is considered non-different by being of the same type, a conscious knower, taya akritya, and by being an amsa, jivamsa rather than swamsa. In that sense, jiva is non-different from Brahman tattva. The amsa is not separate from the amshi. That is the meaning of vyasti. Brahman, or the Lord, who possesses jiva as his shakti, is the samasti. Vyasti is the jiva. By defining Brahman as the samasti, possessing shakti, Brahman's real nature is truthfully indicated. Footnote 21. The words vyasti and samasti come from sama, same, and vyasti, vyasa, divided, and asti, it is so. Right? So same, it is so, and divided, it is so. Yeah, I think it's like astika. It means he's there, or it is so. Right? Okay. What he said, who knows?
Who knows? That was very important.
He said it.
Yes.
Yeah.
He knows.
Okay. The conditioned souls are divided, vyasti, by matter from God. And from one another, Srila Prabhupada elaborates on these terms in a Bhagavatam purport. As such, before the creation or manifestation of the cosmic material world, the Lord exists as total energy, Mahasamasti, and thus desiring himself to be diffused to many, he expands himself further into multi-total energy, Samasti. From the multi-total energy, he further expands himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautic. As explained before, vyasti. As such, the whole creation, the creative energies. As such, the whole creation and the created energies are non-different and different simultaneously, because everything is an emanation from Him, the Mahavishnu, or Mahasamasti. Nothing of the cosmic energies is different from Him. But all such expanded energies have specific functions and display as designed by the Lord, and therefore they are simultaneously different from the Lord. The living entities are also similar energy, marginal potency of the Lord, and thus they are simultaneously one with and different from Him. Srimad Bhagavatam 2, 10, 13, purport. Right, so now we've been pointing out the difference, right? Because that's the principle that has to be established. Like, you know, it's like there. If you're dealing with the proponents of oneness or nothingness, then the first thing to establish is difference. Yes. Right? Because that's just, you just always focus on that one point. When that's established, then you can adjust into showing the similarity. Because otherwise, if you start there, then they'll just become confused and think they'll only hear what they want to hear. Right? If you're always talking to, there's nothing there they want to hear. So then if it's convinced at that point, then they'll be very careful how they understand the oneness. You know, or at least then they'll say, well, you've made all this trouble to say two, now why are you saying one? Mm. Right? But if we... Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So now he's giving the other side. Yes.
The samasti and vyasti.
What is the samasti and vyasti?
Samasti is multi-purple energy.
Well, basically, is sama is same and vyasa is divided. So then from sama and asti, you get samasti. And from vyasa and asti, you get vyasti. So it means one and different. Right? So that's basically what it is. So now he's saying we've discussed the difference, the vyasti. Now we're going to see the sameness. You know, what's the same? Okay. So this tattva called the shelter, ashraya, can be defined in another way in terms of samasti, the totality of existence. Right? Because tattva is already established as Krishna. Because everything is Him. So now we've discussed the difference of Him and His energies. Right? But because they're still His energies, it's still about Him. So it's still tattva. Right? Now we're going to show how they're the same. Right? Does that make sense? So the difference has been pointed out. So He's expanded His energies, you have the main energies, and then from there, then He's gone into the individuals. That was the point. So His internal potency, external potency, the marginal potency, they've expanded in all these different elements. Then there's going to be the individual jivas from the marginal potency. Right? We're not in this point discussing the individuals of the internal potency or these things, because we're still trying to just establish that we exist.
Yes.
And that we're not an illusion, right? You know, a figment of, you know, had a little too much for breakfast or dinner, and so there's some hallucination, and so then, you know, your mother-in-law is there, right? She actually exists. Okay? She's real.
You know. Scare the crap out of David Hume.
Huh?
That would scare the crap out of David Hume.
Yes. You know, so that's the whole point, is that they're always there. You know, and also, you know, as we were saying, you know, that when you get out of bed, the floor actually is
yes,
there.
Yes, you don't.
Right?
Yes.
But the thing is how far did Hume think he would fall if he went through the floor?
He was on the ground floor.
Huh?
Hmm? Wasn't he on the ground floor?
I'm not sure. I would think a person like that would want to be on the ground
floor. Yeah.
He would not, you know, domicile on the second floor.
Penthouse, not for him.
Yeah, no. But even he's on the ground floor, but the thing is okay, if the floor is there, but what about the earth there?
Yeah, that's what
I'm
thinking.
He keeps going through to China? You know?
Yeah, but then he starts coming out, then he starts going out again. So he would end up in the center of the earth.
Oh, I see, by going back and forth till eventually.
So eventually he kind of settled there.
I see. And he didn't like Bird.
I don't think his theory really went that far.
Okay.
I don't know.
He was just more worried about the floor.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah, that was the extent of his
thought. Okay. Because because of the atoms or something, whether it's actually really there or if it's illusory, if it's really there. But then the point is, why is it the floor is the problem? What about the bed?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You could go and sleep on the bed at night and, you know, and yeah, fall through, or, you know. Or maybe the bed's real, but the sheets aren't, so they don't fall through there. Or the sheets are real, but the bed's not.
If he's not, and the sheets will fall through him.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's there. You know, you could have a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Wake up in the morning, the blanket's on the bottom, you're on the top. That could really be an anxiety for the guy, right?
Maybe that's why he took up writing.
Yes. Okay. But then the point is the paper actually there? Okay, so basically what he's just saying is that we've discussed how the jiva and the Lord are different. Now we'll discuss the similarity. Okay. Where was that? Okay. Okay, by defining Brahman, because here, in that sense, jiva is non-different from Brahman, it's tattva. The amsa is not separate from the amsi, right? That is meaning of vyasti. Brahman, or the Lord who possesses jiva's shakti, is samasti. Vyasti is the jiva. By defining Brahman as the samasti, possessing shakti, Brahman's real nature is truthfully indicated. So here also he's pointing out that vyasti is the manifestation of the difference. Right? While the samasti is the sum total, like that. So Krishna is the samasti, the jivas are the vyasti.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But the point is the vyasti still non-different. You know, that's the difficulty where they come into. 56.1 continue. This involves using concepts such as primary creation that define a work as a major purana. And in the following two verses. Okay, so now if we're going to give the tattva called the shelter, ashraya, can also be defined in other terms of samasti, the total of existence, right? Because ashraya is one of the 10 topics. Right? Because Krishna is the ashraya of everything. Here he's meaning shelter. We're not talking rasa, where the devotee is ashraya and Krishna is the vishaya. We're just talking about he's the shelter of everything, so he's the samasti. And then everything else is vyasti coming from that, but it's dependent upon the samasti or the shelter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Hmm? Okay. Maybe.
When we say vyasti, jiva is vyasti, it's because we're talking about from our point of view.
Yes, but I'm saying, but the point is the vyasti is the breakdown of these things, but the jiva is still an ansa of the Lord.
Yes.
It's because, so that's the point, he's the sum total. So you have to understand both of them together. Because otherwise then there's only the jivas and there's no God, he's independent. No. So then you get the other side, right? So that's the only point, is that you have this problem of not understanding Krishna's position. So it's either, you know, we're all one with him or we're so totally different. So that's the point. Exclusive oneness or exclusive duality. These, both of these, you know, the dualness is not proper. It's both of them together function simultaneously. Right? You know, does that make sense? So in other words, Madhva's, standing on this strongness of the dualness is only within the material confines. But once you get to liberation, which is Brahman liberation, there isn't such a thing. Right? So it's not liberation. Liberation is establishing a relation with the Lord. At that point, then the oneness is brought out. Right? Then the samasti is brought out. But otherwise, before that, he just doesn't even breach the topic. It's just not something to discuss. Right? Only because until the Mayavadi is accepted, relationship with the Lord is eternal, then there's no question of discussing oneness.
Yes.
Right? Because the smart is, because we're not used to this. We're taking it, you know, as externals. Right, we're Hare Krishnas, you know, we chant Hare Krishna and all that, and we wear what we wear, you know. But, you know, Christians wear something else, Jews wear something else, and Muslims wear something else, like this. And so, what they do, what they eat, what they chant, all this is different. But we're not seeing the principle of that religion and everything like this. So, we're not used to smartas who are worshippers of Vishnu. And they follow all the same rules that we follow. But at the same time, as they think that ultimately they'll merge into Brahman. So we're not really used to those kind of aspects. Right? So it doesn't seem like it's so important to make this strong difference like Madhva does. But these were your intellectuals. These were the teachers and leaders of society. You know, the smartest. So, because they were the smartest or actual Vaishnavas. So within the smarta group, then the ones who are Shaktas and Shaivas and like this, then it's more obvious. But then those who claim to be Vaishnavas, but then saying it's all one, then that's going to have more of a difference. So we can see is that you just have to make this difference.
Yes. Right? Vyasti, is that usable of any kind of manifestation or only jivas?
No, I would say it would probably be anything, but in here we're just dealing with jivas, because that's the point. It's establishing the position of Bhagavatam. And so that is establishing the need of understanding the Supreme Lord and the living entity.
Yes.
The living entity as servant. So here, then ashraya is this tattva is one of the first things that we're dealing with here. Right?
Yes.
Madhav's point of liberation is not merging into the mind?
No, his point is liberation actually means... His point is the liberation that the Mayavadis talk about is not real. Right, it's this illusory is their whole concept. Because technically there is no such thing as that you merge in Brahman and you lose your identity. You know, they give the example of the green bird and the green tree, but the point is there's still a green bird in a green tree. So even if the jiva is Brahman and doesn't have a gross and subtle body, then he by floating around in the Brahma Jyoti, it's still him, the individual jiva, floating around in the Brahma Jyoti. Right, you can still, you know, pick him out from there. You're very small. You need very small tweezers, but you know, you can still catch him. You know, like that, because yeah. And so the point is it's still him and Brahman, but there's no relationship because of this Karana Sharir, right? Which is that I'm the controller and enjoyer. As soon as you get rid of that, then if I'm not the controller and enjoyer, then I'm the servant. Because anybody who's not in relationship with Krishna, then that Karana Sharir is still there. It still remains. So then you have to, that's what you have to get rid of. That's why the karmas and jnanis never actually get beyond the material position. Even you give up the gross and subtle body, right? Because to liberation in Brahman, then they will actually give up the subtle body. But that Karana Sharira, the consciousness that I'm the control and the joy still remains. So they never actually get to the transcendental position. You know what I'm saying? It's transcendental in that they're there, but it's not that
has any value?
Yeah, it does, because it's temporary. You know, it's not real. You know, it's like so it's you can't. You can't establish that is real.
And his liberation?
His point is liberation, actual liberation means entering into an eternal relationship with the Lord. Yes. Means of, you know, the element of, I mean, for them it's Dasya Rasa. But his point is when you enter into Dasya Shanta Rasa with the Lord, then that's liberation, because that's eternal. Because why look at something that's temporary as eternal? Right? Because transcendental means it's permanently transcendental. In other words, they're temporarily transcendental. You know, it's like someone on a trampoline or something. You're temporarily
flying.
You know, yeah, flying, or temporarily there's no gravity, or you know, you can say it's, you know, but it's not real. Okay. So this involves using concepts such as primary creation that define a work as a major purana, as in the following two verses. Right. So the primary creation is going to have to be shown, because then you're showing how the ashray then expands into the jivas. The samasti becomes the vyasti, right? So this maha samasti becomes the vyasti. Does that make sense? Right. Yeah. So primary creation will be there. And then that defines the major purana. Quote, the themes of this Bhagavatam are primary creation, sarga, secondary creation, visarga, maintenance by the Supreme Lord, Stana, his special mercy, Poshana, the Jiva's desires, Uti, reigns of Manu's, Manvantara, narrations of the Lord's pastimes, Ishanu Kata, annihilation, Nirodha, liberation, Mukti, and the ultimate shelter, Ashraya. To delimit the meeting of the tenth topic, great sages describe the qualities of the other nine in this work. They do this both by direct statements and by implication, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.1-12. Right, so the actual point is they're describing Ashraya, the ultimate shelter. But to make it very clear what's happening with this, then they describe the other nine. Right? Because otherwise all of them are only describing Ashraya, but they point them out as separate aspects so that it becomes clear so you can fully appreciate the tenth topic. Mm-hmm. 56.2. The compound Manvantare Shanu Kata means reigns of Manus and narrations about the Supreme Lord. The basic idea of these verses is this. In this work, 10 topics are defined, beginning with Sarga. The first nine are defined through descriptions of their essential natures as a means of purifying or clearing the way for correct understanding of the tenth, namely the Ashraya. One might complain, but I do not find that done in this work. The answer is that they, the speakers of the Bhagavatam, describe these topics not only literally in direct descriptions, direct descriptions given in their prayers and elsewhere, but also by implication in the unspoken purport of various narrations. Footnote 22. The Bhagavatam contains both direct and indirect glorifications of the Lord. In some prayers there are direct descriptions of the Lord, as in the dialogue between Vidura and Maitreya, or between Kapila and Devahuti. In other episodes, the Lord's qualities are praised by implication, as in the protection of Parikit Maharaj from Ashwatthama's atomic weapon, or the captivation of Sukadeva Goswami's heart. In this way, it is shown that the purpose of the nine subjects described in the Bhagavatam is to explain the tenth, Advaya Jnana, called Ashraya, the fountainhead of everything. In the next section, Srila Jiva Goswami begins explaining each of the 10 categories by quoting their definitions from the Bhagavatam. So in other words, now having established the position of the Jiva and the Lord, right, then we bring it to the next. So now we're going to look at Samasti, how the Lord being everything, because he is the tattva, he is the topic. So that means then to describe these things, how the Jiva is part of the Lord and all these, you have to have the primary creation and these other topics. Right? So then in having those topics, that makes up your 10 topics, but they're still only describing the Supreme Lord. Right? So he's making that point. Now he'll get into describing each of the 10 topics. Right? So that we see clearly that each topic is for describing something in connection with the Lord.
So it's basically how to connect everything to the Lord.
Yes, how to connect everything to the Lord. Right? Because they'll go down to how much detail they go down, but ultimately it has to be connected back to the Lord. That's the whole point. To understand the Lord of Brahman means to know him along with his potencies, right? Because that was the point, is he comes with potencies. Just as one who knows the sun must also know about its potency, sunshine. Likewise, like what would be the meaning of the sun without sunshine?
Right? I was thinking sun as father, son.
Yeah. Likewise, one can know a person by his works and attributes. The 10 topics of the Bhagavatam occur only by the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the purpose of their description is to know him. In this verse, Jiva Goswami defines the 9 potencies, starting with Sarga, creation. Text 57. Just to bring it out. On the previous page, on 20, on the verse that describes the 10 topics, right? Or the two verses, like that. Then we have primary creation, Sarga, secondary creation, Visarga, right? Then the Manvantaras, Manvantara, then, then I guess the Ishanukata. forgetting the kings, because that's the only thing left, it's the kings, unless they're expanding from there. But those is what makes it, in general, generically a purana. But then by having these other topics, that's what makes it a mahapurana. Mm-hmm. Right? Because then you see in the mahapurana the aspects of, here, the Lord, the maintenance by the Supreme, His special mercy, the jiva's desires, narrations of the pastimes, right? Annihilation, liberation, right? So you see the element of the Lord comes out more in the Mahapurana, right? The Purana, not as much. Text 57. Therefore, to elucidate the 10th topic, 7 verses are spoken to define all 10. Bhuta matrendriya dhyam janma sarga udharita brahmano guna vaishamyad visarga purushas rita. The first verse reads thus. The generation of the physical elements, of the subtle objects of perception, of the senses, and of consciousness is called sarga, the primary creation. It results from the Supreme Lord's disturbing the equilibrium of the modes of nature. Brahmano guna vaishamyad. Footnote 23. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan comments, the brahmano guna vaishamyad means from the disturbance of the gunas caused by the Lord. Yes, you know which happened. Page. This means that the Lord is the original creator of the universe from the most subtle cause, prakriti. Brahman is the creator using the effects, material elements. Right. So he is disrupting. Remember before it was, who was it? Baisham, was it? Yes, Shankya. Remember, because we'll use the Shankya. Remember, Shankya was this one. Was it Shankya or was it the atomic theory? That property is there in its natural balance. When it gets out of balance, then you get the creation. And when the jiva has understood his position, that comes out because the jiva wants to know who, you know, what is this, the relationship, what is all this. So then you get this whole creation, right? Then having known all that, now he's satisfied, so everything goes back into balance, it goes all back into prakriti. You remember, was that Vaisheshika or was that Shankya?
I think it was Shankya.
Do you remember?
It sounds like Shankya.
Yeah. So, but the difficulty comes up is that, because they're using the word Purusha, but they don't distinguish between, so it may be that's atheistic Shankya, because otherwise they don't distinguish between Purusha meaning the Mahasamasti, and Purusha meaning the Vyasti, the Jiva. Right? So then, so it's the Supreme Lord who he agitates, right, out of disturbance of the gunas by his glance. Right? Then, from that glance, then all the elements come out. So you get the 24 elements. Then, taking that, then he says, so then the Brahman is the creator using the effects, material elements. So then he creates from there.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So here, the generation of the physical elements, right, that was by his glance. The subtle objects of perception, the senses, right, so then you're getting sense objects in the tanmatras, right? And of conscience, because the sense objects will be out of the physical elements, right? The senses will be there, and then the subtle objects of perception, that will be what's in between, right? And of consciousness is called sarga, right? Because you also have to change the consciousness, right? Yeah. So that's the primary creation. So you're creating that whole situation. And that comes from the Lord, right? Secondary creation affected by Lord Brahma is called visarga, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.3. So don't worry about the too much detail, because it's coming up very soon. Don't worry. Yeah, because this is 10th canto. The bhutas are the elements such as ether. The matras are sound and so on, the subtle objects of perception. The word dhi, consciousness, here indicates both the mahatattva and the false ego. So consciousness here, mahat, means that all the jivas are there. It's all consciousness, right? So it's Vasudev Sattva. But here, when we're describing it as Sarga, then it's Vasudev Sattva coming this direction. Right? It's going from Vasudev Sattva about to fall inside. But when we talk about Vasudev Sattva, we talk about going from this position back to that on the way out. You understand? But it's the same spot.
Yes.
You know, you mean if you're going to some place, you go through the same terminal, right? So it's just a matter of which way you're going. Is that also mentioned here are the senses, right? Because the false ego, so that means it's coming this way. If it's Vasudev Sattva with pure ego, then it's going that way. Okay. Also mentioned here are the senses. The generation of the Buddhas and so on, which is done by Brahman, the Supreme Lord, through an imbalance caused by transformation of the modes, is called Sarga. And the creation of the moving, and so they're taking it that perfection is balanced as it goes back into property. And then they think now everything is perfect, right? But the problem is that that's just how the material creation works. Because it's his energy, and it'll just be property. And then by that imbalance, you know, generated by the Lord, then you'll get the material creation, right? And if it's not, it won't be there. But the spiritual world, that's manifest. That's always manifest, right? But the material is when the imbalance is there, then it manifests, and when it's not, it doesn't. It's just part of him. Right? Does that make sense? So again, we're talking about the samasthi. It comes from him. Then, by that, it expands, right? And then from there, he breaks it down again, right? So then you get the expansion, and then you get the individual. And the creation of the moving and non-moving creatures is called Visarga. Right? So then you're getting that first point where is Sarga. Then you're getting basically the manifestation of the jivas with the Visarga. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so with that point that Prabhupada was making before. Isn't it? Okay. Lord exists as total energy, Mahasamasti, and thus desiring himself to be diffused as many, expands himself further into multi-total energy, Samasti. Right? So then the energies are manifest. From the multi-total energy, he further expands himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely Adiatmak, Adidaivik, and Adibhautik. Right? As explained before as Vyasti. Right? We see, so there's two stages there. So the first stage is that principle. Then the second stage is where now the individuals are manifest.
Yes.
So the principle of all this is in the primary. Right? So the energy and what is the blueprint of how that Vyasti will work. Then the Visarga, then the Vyasti becomes manifest. Mm-hmm. So Adiatmik, Adibhautik, Adidaivik. So it's same jivas, but just somebody is the demigod controlling it, somebody's the individual who's getting controlled, and then there's the Adibhautik who are, you know, people who just kind of get in the way between those two. Right? It's already bad enough, right? You know, how you say the weather's already bad, and then you bumped into him.
Yes.
Right? You know, so, you know, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Like that. The secondary creation is called Paurusha because it is done by Brahma, the creator, Purusha, who is related to the universal body. Right, so he's the universal body. Before is that in Manu he's describing as Virat. So Virat means is this form of the Lord that's half male, half female. Right? And that position then, that is where Brahma comes from. Right? So in other words, that where both elements are there, and so then he is from that aspect.
Where?
Yes.
Doesn't Brahma come from
Garbhodaksha? Yes, from Garbhodaksha Vishnu, but there's that principle, he's coming from the lotus, he's manifest on the lotus. So you have both the aspect of Brahman and his Shaktis there.
The lotus is the Shakti?
The lotus is Shakti, but it's also non-different from Krishna. You know. So in the lotus, that's your universal form. All the aspects are there. So the universal form is the Lord, but with his energies. And so you have this aspect where all the different principal elements are there. You know, I mean, within the creation. You know, what is all the different kinds of life forms, all their activities, what they look like, all the different situations they can be in, all the activities that can be formed, all the results that can be gained. Does that make sense? So that's the totality of that creative potency. That's the lotus. Right? So he's born from the lotus. So that lotus is Vira. So you have all these different things happening at once. Right? It means it can still be all these things at once. Right? But depending on which angle you're taking, then one or the other is brought out. Does that make sense? Because it's coming from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the universal form. Yeah. Right? At the same time as Kiradakshaya Vishnu is the universal form, because he enters into everything and the jiva's desire is being operated by him. So in other words, the primary the operation or the manifestation of the primary creation, that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Right? Then Brahma manifests the secondary, but the maintenance of that, that's Kiradakshaya Vishnu. Right? Because you have a desire in that separate, that Vyasti condition there, and then Paramatma, he's the one that's sanctioning and all that, and then it's being carried out. Right? So both of them are how you say, the universal form. Right? Like that. You also have is that, why do you do anything? Because you're attracted to, that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then you have a need for, that's Kiradakshaya Vishnu. Because Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is Prajumna, and Kiradakshaya Vishnu is Aniruddha. So thinking, feeling, then is willing. You know, so you think about it, then you want it, then it's sanctioned by Kiradakshaya Vishnu, then you make the active endeavor. Is it? Okay. Continuing in the seven verses, 57.2, the word maintenance, sthiti, means the victory of Lord Vaikuntha. And sustenance, okay, maintenance means the victory of Lord Vaikuntha. Now, why we would say is the victory of Lord Vaikuntha? Because means maintenance is where you stay, going, keep it in place. Because ignorance is trying to destroy it, passion is trying to create, change it into something else. So passion is trying to transform it into, you know, something different, and ignorance is transforming it back into basically nothing. So therefore, maintenance means the victory of Lord Vishnu. Mm-hmm. Like that. Because that's the hardest thing to do.
Yes.
Generally, those who are really good at organizing or managing, they're able to maintain.
Yes.
You know, that's because that's the most difficult, like that. Then doing that, you can use the others, but that's the most difficult, like that. And generally what it means is you're fighting against those who are trying to destroy it or change it into something else because they don't actually know what they have.
And if you're successful, nobody notices.
Yeah, well, that's that also. Yes. Yes. Therefore, in grammar, there's that, forget what it is, but there's a... I'm not sure if it's the visarga. There's a consonant that's, or something that's not sounded.
Silent.
It's silent, but at the same time is that indicates the Lord, because that's what makes the other thing work, but you don't see it.
Mm.
So the Lord makes everything work, but you don't see Him. Yeah. Yes, no, I'm just saying it's within the Sanskrit grammar. There's a definition of something that's there. You know, like, it doesn't, like you say...
The consonant of, which is there, like in ka, we have
right? Yeah, but you're saying it. You see it. We're talking about it's not. I don't remember it, but I just kind of like in English, you have, let's say, the E at the end. Like you have same. Right? But if you didn't have the E, it'd be Sam. So it actually has an effect. Does that make sense? But it itself doesn't have, there's no, you don't appreciate it. I'm not sure. It's some specific thing in the grammar. But generally, I don't... Have you come across it?
I'm not sure.
Like that? Because you won't get it in Western Sanskrit grammar. You get it in the when you go through technically by sutras, the traditional, then it comes up. Like that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And sustenance, poshana, is a special favor. Right? Because there's maintenance, and then there's sustenance. Right? So then there's that special favor that's being given to the devotees. Like this. This is like the special favor, with saving the Purkit Maharaj, mm-hmm. these kind of things.
Yeah.
Right? Reigns of Manu, Manvantara, indicate the principles of transcendental religion. Right? So here he's pointing out the principles of transcendental religion. So Manu, as we see, as it opens, it's talking about transcendental religion. Otherwise, the sages say we understand religion, but we want to know how this connects to the Lord, is the transcendental element. Right?
Yes.
So this idea that, oh, Manu is not for us, you know, it's just mundane. No, it's actually, it's transcendental religion. But in going through it, you're dealing with sages who already understand the principles, so therefore they will always remember that all this connects back to the Lord and they can see the connection.
So that's
right?
Our problem.
Yes, but it's not obvious, as has been pointed out by Narad Muni. Therefore, the Bhagavatam does the same thing, but makes it obvious. So all the things that you see in Manu are then given in Bhagavatam. But then the transcendental connection is obvious. But the point is the principle of transcendental religion. That's Daivavarnasham. So Manu is Daivavarnasham. Right? People use it, not Daivali, but, you know. And creative urges, uti, refers to intentions to engage in material activities. Because I think before, as we had mentioned on the uti, what was that? The jiva's desires was uti. Right. Okay. Creative urges. Right. So then we see all these, so these nicely defined. Refers to intentions to engage in material activities. So, quoting from Bhagavatam, topics about the Lord, Ishanu Katha, are the pastimes of the Supreme Lord's incarnations and faithful devotees. Right? So that interaction. Pastimes that serve as topics for various narrations. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10, 4-5. Here, maintenance, sthiti, or sthana, refers to the victory of the Supreme Lord Vaikuntha. His super excellence in maintaining the prescribed status of each of his creatures. Right? Because as it is, you'll see, it will always come back to that. The Lord will always prevail. People come up with a different idea, like that, like we discussed this morning. You know, if it's man-made, it's superior than natural. But then, you know, it just took what?
50 years.
No, less. Means it took about 20 to 30, 20 years for, I mean, we had some people immediately starting, right? In the 60s, you started this whole, you know, kind of natural thing. But there, you know, they were considered counterculture. But only in the 70s, 80s, then it really started in the main culture, right? And now, if you're not eating organic, you're the alternative culture, right? Now, and then you get something weird, you know, like that. So, yeah. So it always comes back. He always wins. It's just a matter of how long it takes people to figure it out. Sadly, it can take a long time, you know, like that. Among all thus maintained, okay, his devotees receive a special favor or sustenance, poshana, right? Everybody's maintained, but they get special favor, like that. So poshana is just for the devotees. Right? But otherwise, this sthiti, or sthana, he's always going to prevail. Okay. Reigns of Manu indicate the histories of the Manus and other saintly persons who lived during the various Manvantaras and are specially favored by the Lord. These histories constitute the, quote, principles of transcendental religion, Sad-Dharma, because these histories offer the Dharma of meditation on the Supreme Lord. Right? So we see in here, it said, you know, it's also mentioning these actually who live during the various manvantars. So that will include the kings. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to mention it separately.
Yes.
Right? Within a general Purana, then it's mentioned as a separate topic. Okay, footnote 20. Yes.
What is the Manu's position in the Vedic?
He's the head of mankind, so he sees that the you know, laws of religion are being followed in that. So you see in the other ages of the Tri Yuga, he's much more prominent. But in this age, it seems nobody really cares.
Yes.
I guess he doesn't bother to drop by. You know? Like it says, the demigods don't even come here to pass urine. Well, before, they used to come for the sacrifices. And, you know, so they come by, they'd hang out, you know, different things like that. The Gandharvas would come. Everyone would come and do something here. But nowadays, it doesn't.
Maybe when we open the new temple.
Sometimes you see Narad Muni comes by and stuff. Yes.
Father of mankind, does that mean that his laws don't apply to demigods and yakshas and all the other beings in the universe?
I mean, certain aspects do, certain don't. I mean, the general etiquette and culture are there, but certain laws don't apply. You know, just like Arjuna was looking at Urvasi because she was connected with Puru Ravas, who's, you know, way up in the line, in their line coming down. So he's looking at her like a, you know, a great 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 grandmother like that. You know, not exactly what somebody who looks 16 years old, you know, wants to hear. You know, but her point was is, as the demigods, we don't function. We're not controlled by these rules.
Okay.
Right, so there's certain things, but we see is etiquette and stuff still has to be there, mm-hmm. Right? Means, you know, in other words, the principle of you don't insult a lady by, you know, calling her grandma, you know, like that. You know, so it's
remains. It's,
yeah, that remains. So you know, so he made this mistake, and it didn't work out good for him.
Okay.
Right, but ultimately it did work because it was Krishna's arrangement, so he could hide nicely. Yes,
same Manu is like a Prajapati.
I mean, Swayambhuva is a Prajapati, but the others are not. It's a position below the Prajapatis.
Below.
Yeah, like that. But the Prajapatis will be high. Brahma is the highest, then the Prajapatis. Right, then it will be Manu. Then after that, the kings. So it'll come down like that from the. So it'll come down through Swayambhuva Manu. He's the Kshatriya. But generally, all the others are all Brahmins. Like that. But then you also have the great sages. So then that goes, they go together. So the great sages, you know, and then that administrative line, then they go together. Okay, footnote 24. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this aspect of the verse. The right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord and thus be in perfect peace of mind under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so that's that protection, that sthana. Right? The manas and their laws are meant to give right direction in life. The impetus for activity is the desire for fruit of work, right? So that he was saying about uti. The impetus for activity is the desire for fruit of work. So we're trying to get from uti to that's connected to the Lord. So the uti is, your first step is that karma yoga, right? And then from there it's supposed to come to the naishkarma, karma yoga. And then from there it just comes to pure bhakti. Is that right? Yeah. So that's 2.10.4. The directive scriptures made by the manus in different ages and millenniums are called sad-dharma. Like, right? Sad means eternal. Good guidance for the human beings who should take advantage of all the revealed scriptures for their own interest to make life successful termination. Right? So successful termination means that it finishes with God consciousness. So the point is since one is the impetus for activity is the desire for fruit of work, how do you switch that into pure transcendence? Because you can say, well, we'll just chant. Great. Then just like Haridas Thakur, sit down and chant. But if you're doing anything else other than chanting, what's guiding that? Why are you doing something else? You know, what's the reason? So then all those things, then how to connect that to the Lord. So you're taking this impetus for activity and translating it into something connected to the Lord, or transforming it.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's therefore the laws of mana. That makes successful termination. Otherwise, you can't terminate it if there's fruit of work. As long as there's fruit of work, there'll always be another birth. Right? The creation is not false, but it is a temporary manifestation just to give a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead. Right? There isn't something else. If we're looking at everything, that this is what the whole creation is for, there isn't something else, then we start to view it from that point. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's kind of like, well, there's this lifestyle that's going on, the whole world kind of paradigm, and then there's Krishna consciousness. No, there's only Krishna consciousness. Right? That's all there actually is in reality. Then there's an illusory paradigm that there's something other than that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say you have school, right? And the kids are in the school. Right? So the whole point of the school is to get educated. There's rules, there's this, there's schedules, there's a whole thing there. Now, in illusion, some kids think there's another alternative reality. You know what I'm saying? But that's not actually what it is. It's not that, no, that's one way of, that's the prominent way, and then this way of that, you know, school is there for, you know, learning and all that. That's you could look at it that way. No, that is the only way to look at it. The other way is illusory. So we're used to trying to do, you know, we're adding Krishna consciousness to this already illusion. But the point is actually Krishna consciousness. The real thing, the illusion is our, how you say, unfortunate misunderstanding of the reality. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. If you look at it like that, it starts to clear up so many of the basis of misgivings. Right? Misgivings on how does Krishna consciousness apply in my life. But the point is we're looking at it as if Krishna consciousness is just an alternative.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So similar to the darkness doesn't have a separate existence.
No, it doesn't have a separate existence. So this idea that there's darkness and then there's also that light kind of thing. No, there's only light and lack of light. So illusion is lack of light. You know. So that's the...
Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not an alternative, it's a necessity.
Yes, very nice. Very nice. Yes. So, and the necessity we see is also the prayojana, means it's a goal. Right? You know, you have to have it, like that. It's not an alternative, because an alternative you don't necessarily need, it's a luxury.
You could go that way.
Yeah, you know, but here it's a necessity, you have to have it, because that's the only real thing.
It's like all this philosophy we've just been discussing, Mayavad philosophy, it's not such thing.
Yes.
It's
just
screwed it out of
the
down, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so it's a intellectual, you know, luxury. Unnecessary luxury.
What's not luxury trying to come to understand that?
Sorry?
What's not luxury to hack our way through that for weeks?
No, it's not. Okay. That's the, how you say? Yeah. Nice. Oh, you're on 24, okay.
Maharaj, you said that we should chant like Haridas Thakur if we can.
No, that wasn't what I said.
Oh.
I was saying, because we were discussing the importance of Manu, because Prabhupada's making it, that the point of what Manu gives his laws are to give the right direction in life. Right? Because otherwise, fruit of work is there, so this is the correct fruit of work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole point. So this is much of the time very much misunderstood. Like Hari Bhakti Vilas will be taken, oh, that's just karma. How to engage the karmis. No, the point is who's not a karmi? Who doesn't have the material fruit of element. So Hari Bhakti Vilas shows on the ritual side how to take everything and connect it to the Lord. So all the different aspects, because you have, for us, then we don't have so much of a background. It's not that we have a particular
gotra that follows a particular Pancharatrik scripture, you know, or you know, particular agama. And so then we want to know how these things are connected properly. And so then the Hari Bhakta Vilasa will describe this wide range of ways of doing it, and within that, then one of them will be yours. Right? We're coming from a background where we don't exactly have a padati, you know, other than you know, something that we don't really want to discuss. You know, you know, like, how you say, you know, how you say in the Talmud, the car with the top down, drive by slowly, you know, things like that you have to do, because if you go by fast, then, you know, it's not going to work out, yes. Right? You know, so it's got to be slowly.
Yes. You won't get the desired result.
Yes, you won't get the desired result. So we do have, you know, elements like that, but it's not exactly for the upliftment of the soul, right? So these ones that are connected to the Vedas, it does that. It connects them all. But the point is it's connecting to pure devotional service. And so it's not just karma itself. It's showing that. So just like Manu, then connects all the social elements. Right? So in other words, the ritualistic elements people are doing for fruitive work, and the social elements they're doing as fruitive work. So then between these, then everything is defined. Right? So then your sambandha aspects are defined very nicely. Right, what to do. And then applying those, then we have, then Rupa Goswami points out how pure devotional service works. Right, so we can get it very, very directly.
Maharaj, I was just trying to work out, because the other day you said that Bhaktisiddhanta said something, and I said that his disciples were chanting 64 rounds even though they were doing service all day.
Yeah, but they were chanting 16 rounds, but the 48 rounds was in the form of service connected with the Lord.
Yeah, so I was trying to figure out whether if you're serving at the temple, obviously, you know, pretty much you're not doing that for yourself. So is that the equivalent of sitting down like Haridas Thakur?
As long as you're always doing that, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the point is he's showing how one should sit down and chant. So we do 16 rounds of that, and then we do 48 rounds of service.
Yeah.
Right? Like that.
So we are sitting down like Haridas Thakur.
Yes. Yeah. Huh?
It looks
fine. Whether we're awake or not, that's another thing.
Conscious, not unconscious.
Yes. Yes. Okay. The desire to go back to Godhead and functions performed in that direction form the right path of work. So you have to have the desire, right? And then the action that goes with it. So that necessity has to be there, the desire for this, and then the activities being performed. When such a regulative path is accepted, the Lord gives all protection to his devotees by his causeless mercy. Then you get poshanam. Right? While the non-devotees risk their own activities to bind themselves in a chain of fruitive reactions. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.4 purport. Right? So because they follow nicely the sthana, right, by following the sad-dharmas given by Manus and others, therefore then they get poshana. So we're seeing this going on all the time. That's why, and that certainly means, is being pointed out that one doesn't try to take each one of these topics and make it into a canto.
Yeah.
You understand? They have a general thing that they're showing, but all of these will be shown at once. Because you're seeing the devotee with the Lord performing the pastime. So this is the Ishanu Kata, right? The same time as they're doing according to the laws of Manu, like that, they have the different things, they're getting the Lord's mercy. You know, does that make sense? Sometimes you see there's the element of uti, that material desire, and then it's being transformed. All these different, does that make sense? So these are the topics, but they're all nicely woven together. Okay, 24. Within the same context of sthiti, maintenance, creative urges, refers to desires to perform various kinds of fruitive work. Right, so... Right. So then uti is in connection with sthiti, that we want to do something else. But Vishnu always comes out on top. So either you bring it in line with him, or the modes of nature will bring it in line with them. Right? You know.
Also included within Stiti are historical accounts of the deeds of Lord Hari's incarnations and followers. These accounts are called Ishanukata. Because the whole Stiti or maintenance, we see that all these pastimes are going on, and the pastimes is maintaining the creation. Right? Ishanukata. But so he's just showing how each one is connected to the other. 25. Srila Prabhupada comments on the significance of these narrations. The merciful Lord, out of his causeless mercy, descends to various planets in the material world and acts for the salvation of the conditioned souls. That makes the history and narrations worth reading. Srimad Bhagavatam offers such transcendental topics of the Lord in relationship with great devotees. Therefore, the topics of the devotees and the Lord are to be given respectful oral reception. Because maybe so many that it's not necessarily that aspect of that great devotion comes out. It's like we mentioned about the mosquito pastime. So all the demigods come and they buzz around and, you know, like that, a few minutes and then the pastime's over. So it may not come up in Bhagavatam. It'll be there in the Puranic, you know, the 1 billion verses of the Purana. But it won't come in Bhagavatam because you're not bringing out this dynamic between the devotees and the Lord. You know, just that pure devotion. Right? It means that the demigods, out of respect for the Lord, as devotees, are coming in. You know. Yes.
Doing the thing.
Yes?
Doing the thing.
Yes. Okay. So, Ishanukata is the accounts that are within, in other words, describing his maintenance. You know, like that. So then how they follow that and that by doing the reins of Manu, that's Saddharma. Right? So in other words, the devotees acting within the laws of Manu, right, then are within the Lord's pastimes, which is then, you know, showing how he maintains, then he gives that special mercy. Right? And their uti, their material fruit of work, then becomes connected to the Lord.
57.3,
yes.
If you talk about devotees,
means, well, for devotees, then it's not so much that, see, they're trying to do everything in connection to the Lord. But the point is you're, it means either it's already accomplished, and then you're just talking about the interaction with the Lord and part of the pastimes, or that transference of the fruitive into the transcendental. You know, through the process of karma yoga. So we may start off with sakam karma yoga and then move it to nishkam karma yoga. So as we see is that from, what was that discussion before, is that that's here. Is it here? Or Baladev is Baladev, Vishwanath. Vishwanath makes these points very strong, is that the sakam karma yoga isn't actually counted as part of pure bhakti. Like that. It's part of the process of bhakti, of coming to, but it's not considered part of. The nishkam karma yoga is considered that is supportive of, that has some value in establishing pure devotion. Because from there, then it's very close to doing it, you know, starting with the Lord rather than starting with yourself. But the sakam, it's about yourself and all that, and you're including the Lord in it. So it's not considered that strong of a position. From that position, one can easily take birth again. Right? From the second position, then that's there. It's even pointed out the second position in connection with devotees who are worshipping the Lord in Vaikuntha. Even from that position, you can go to Vaikuntha. Like that. But you know, but it's not for us, it's pure devotion getting into Braj, then it's still not close enough. But it's a useful position to be in. So in other words, acting in devotional service as a madhyama is what's recommended, not as a neophyte. Yes.
So when you say karma misra bhakti, we mean sakam.
Karma misra bhakti, it can be either. It means depending on whether we're looking at it as progressive or not so progressive. If it's progressive, generally it would mean nishkam karma. So if we're talking about karma yoga as bhakti yoga, we generally mean nishkam karma yoga. Or the element of it's shuddha bhakti, but it means engaging your activities in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's talking about the two higher aspects.
right?
Yeah.
But if it's talking about in the negative as karma misra bhakti, then it has faults. Then we're talking about the sakam. Or if we're being very technical, then like if it's generic, depends who's discussing it. Vishwanath's discussing it generally, it will mean he's still pointing out that it's still not pure devotion.
Yes.
Right? Because his point is prema.
Yes.
Now that's the standard. Below that is below standard. Right?
Yeah.
He's making that very clear in his analysis. And Baladeva is pointing out is that it's below, but because it's if you connect that to pure devotion, then it's giving the same effect. Right? So in other words, you need both. You need to know that the position I'm at can give me prema, but at the same time, until it's prema, it's not prema. Right? Right, isn't it? That's the old adage. It's not prema until it's prema.
So, when one is complacent, that's still sakam?
Complacency is basically ignorance. So it would just be interim between. Because, I mean, you could. It would. Generally, you're talking about sakam when you're actually doing some service. So in between is then, you know, the interim of ignorance, and that's kind of, it's just ignorance.
Yeah, I think, no, what I meant was, you said, okay, my understanding is sakam is that you haven't really tasted bhakti yet, like bhakti yoga. Whereas one, when one becomes more progressive, it's more nishkam. So if they're just complacent on the sakam level, then therefore really not doing any devotional service.
No, it's that they're doing, they've had some taste, but it's small, it's not prominent. So because of that, then they may be complacent. But that complacency is due to ignorance. So sakam means they're performing the activity and considering that the activity and its results are theirs. And the reason that they're doing it is because they want that result. But at the same time, is they're willing to share that result with Krishna. Does that make sense? As opposed to they're doing the activity because the result will be for Krishna. Right? But they like doing that particular activity. So that's your naishkarma. It's just like you're comfortable with your conditioning. And so you use it to please the Lord. But there's not the fruit of element that you want the result for yourself. It's for the Lord. But the comfortableness in working within that. So the consideration is I can do this for Krishna rather than starting with Krishna and coming back into that. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it means, in other words, what you're saying is that taste is not strong enough. But we see is that even this taste is not so strong in Nishta, one is stable in his service, right? So then that would be considered your beginning of how you say, naishkarma, like that. But that would be an aspect of it. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't be, so therefore, because of that, but there is some taste, but it's just not that much. So the volume of taste for the material is greater than the taste for the spiritual. Therefore, there may be spiritual complacency. So it's connected, right? But then naishkarmya means the taste for the spiritual is greater than the taste for the material. It doesn't mean the material is completely gone away, but the prominence is in the spiritual. Is that okay?
So, Mara, so if you were to go about it from the point of sannyas, meaning the result is Krishna's, the activities of Krishna's, everything, to begin with, does that mean that you would do anything that is required in devotional service?
No, it just means that what you're doing, you do it with that mentality. It's not a comment on what you're doing, because what you're doing is according to your prescribed duties.
But doesn't that mean, along with your conditioning, which you just said is...
Yeah, that's what I said.
But you said that's not the highest one.
No, but the highest one is not naishkarmya. The highest one is just shuddha bhakti, in this definition. That, of course, is naishkarmya,
yeah.
But it's generally, it'll be referred to in that way as showing... Bach devotional service is Naishkarma, it's only for the Lord, and material being Sakam, that is for yourself. But we're talking about within the practice of bhakti, you can break it down into three levels. You know what I'm saying? You have to be able to use these terms in a variety of ways, like that. So, depending on the situation, because otherwise if you... means the principle of it still applies no matter which application you're using, but the detail of its application is there.
Okay, I'll get back to you.
Okay. Then 57.3 Nirodho. Shyanu Shayanam Atmana Saha Shaktipi Mukter Hitvan Yatarupam Swarupena Vyavastiti. The lying down of the soul, along with his own energies, after the Lord lies down, is called the winding up of the cosmic manifestation, Nirodha. The word liberation, Mukti, refers to the soul's giving up all other identification to become situated in his true identity. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6. After the time of maintenance comes, the quote-unquote annihilation, the lying down of the soul, the jiva, along with his own energies, upadis, following Lord Hari. In other words, after Lord Hari lies down. Specifically, Lord Hari's lying down means his closing his eyes to the material creation, and the jiva's lying down refers to his entering into the Lord. Within the topic of annihilation, the jiva is giving up his, quote-unquote, other forms, the ignorance and so on imposed on him by the power of illusion, and his being established in his true identity is called liberation. Right, yes?
Does karana sharira follows?
It means, so go here, means where we're talking here in true identity. So it's called liberation. So that's what Madhvacharya is saying. So true identity means you're a servant of the Lord. So then that would mean then going back to Godhead, like that. We're not talking here mukti meaning this other aspect, because for us it's not real.
Yes.
You could say it's there, but it's not real because it's temporary. So we won't count it. Just like. Fruitive activities are temporary, though action is natural for the jiva, but this temporary one, that's not. So just like being situated spiritually is natural for the soul, but only in the permanent of in a relationship. Right? So just like, does that make sense? So actions that are temporary and liberation that is temporary, we don't consider real, like that. Okay. So therefore, true identity is called liberation. So, Srila Baladeva Vibhushan provides further purport to this important verse from Bhagavatam. Giving up hitva, the false form, anyata rupam, that of a devata or human produced by avidya, corresponding to aversion to the Lord, destroying it by bhakti, which follows from favorability to the Lord, a person becomes situated in a special way, vyavastiti, near the Lord, with no return to birth and death. He becomes situated in the surup of the jiva, surupena, endowed with the eight qualities, starting with absence of sin. Right, so that would be his position of coming to the transcendental platform. So it's distinguished from this other that he's giving up his upadis, but we see that as soon as the Lord opens his eyes and breathes out again, right? Or if we're talking even within Garbhodakshaya Vishnu at night when Brahma sleeps and he closes his eyes, then the jivas go back into the Lord. As soon as he opens his eyes, they come out again and the upadis manifest. So that means they didn't go away. Right? So that will be this, Nirodha. Because in other words, you have three I know of. This Nirodha, it means destructions. You have at the end of the the cycle of the the manu, right? And then you have at the end of the day of Brahma, and then you have at the end of the life of Brahma. You even have little short, kind of little dinky ones with, at the end of the four yugas. Right? There's something like up to the earth planet, it gets flooded. And that, so, you know, so you have these things going on. So here is then you have to see, because the same principle is there, whether he goes back into Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, or he's going back into Mahavishnu, or even just when he sleeps and he's going into Kiradakshaya Vishnu, the same principle is there. He's giving up his upadis, but it's a temporary giving up because he hasn't given up the Karana Sharir, so therefore he'll come out again.
So as soon as he comes out, the bodies are waiting for him.
Yeah, they're just waiting right there. That's the point in the principle. The primary creation, the souls are all there, and the transcendental platform, because they're only conscious. But as soon as Brahma does the secondary, then immediately they take their position within the material world according to their upadis.
Moment to wake up and... So they're waiting for you again.
Yeah. Oh, no, my old friend. Welcome. Welcome. My controller of body.
Yes.
Okay, does that make sense? So here, then, giving up hitva, the false form. So this means, so mukti means the final nirodha. Right, winding up the cosmic manifestation. But why it's different from mukti is that mukti means you won't come back again, and nirodha means you will. Mm. So that means that final. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, just like the sthanam, then when it's connected to the Lord, then you get poshana.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Maharaj, when the yogis and the nyayas and visheshkas, these people of their liberation, they refer to this.
Yeah, they're referring to this. Just like before you can remember is that it's talking about the creation or sthana is happening because the Lord agitates the material energy. So then all the elements come out. So there's that creation of that imbalance in the three modes. So because you're looking at it and glancing with the false ego. Right, because Shiva goes, so therefore it creates an imbalance. And so then in one of these philosophies, then balance means when the Jiva understands everything, then the modes go back into balance and it turns back into Prakriti. That's Shankya, okay. So because he wanted to know his relationship, I think, with Prakriti, therefore that desire created the imbalance. So they're taking Purusha as the Jiva rather than Purusha as the Supreme. Like that. Yes.
You were talking about the three kinds of destruction. I was reading that some of the acharyas consider there's a fourth type of annihilation called the daily annihilation, which means that the matter in the material body is decaying with every day, especially when the jiva enters into deep sleep. Everything is destroyed and then comes back.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So then, yes. Yeah, so it's going on. You know, it's just a matter of whether it's the Kiradakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, or, you know, Karanadakshaya Vishnu, like that. But then on the, you know, you have all this. So, destruction is going on.
Daily.
You know? Daily, yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada also comments on this important verse as follows. The material gross and subtle forms are simply due to the conditioned soul's ignorance. And as soon as he is fixed in devotional service to the Lord, he becomes eligible to be freed from the conditioned state. This devotional service is transcendental attraction for the Supreme on account of his being the source of all pleasing humors. Everyone is after some pleasure of humor or for enjoyment, but does not know the supreme source of all attraction, raso vaisaha. The Vedic hymns inform everyone about the supreme source of all pleasure, the unlimited fountainhead of all pleasures, the personality of Godhead. So when it goes to there, then it's done. When those upadis are about fruit of actions, you know, in other words, it's as uti, then this nirodha, you will come back again.
Yes.
Right? But once you give that up by connecting it to the Lord, in other words, everyone's trying to be happy. Even the impersonalist is trying to be happy. Right? The Mayavadis and the Buddhists, they're doing what they're doing to become happy. They think this will make me happy. But they don't understand that that source of the pleasure of Brahman is the Lord himself. Right? So if they understand that, then they keep moving forward and actually get to liberation. Right? Otherwise, they just get to this nirodha, just destruction. Because that's all they've done. They destroyed their individual identity. So even if you don't work at it, you know, it's going on regularly. Right? You know, you know, be sure that you keep your health good so you get good, deep sleep. You know, in other words, you're having dreams, it's not quite there yet. But otherwise, if not, you know, at the end of the life of Brahma, then, you know, you get 3/4 of a second of that, you know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, this one's 3/4 of a second, so that one will be 3/4 of a second. That was all within the thing. Someone else thinking it was a footnote. Okay. Oh, not only that, there's a comma. Okay. The Vedic hymns inform everyone about the supreme source of all pleasure, the unlimited fountainhead of all pleasures, the personality of Godhead. And one who is fortunate enough to get this information through transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam becomes permanently liberated to occupy his proper place in the kingdom of God. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:6 purport. So you can also take liberation as you're out of that difficult situation. Like you get into a difficult situation, when that situation changes, then that's called liberation, right? Yeah. So then, you know, or life here, you go to the heavenly planets. That's a kind of liberation. Right, or when you go to higher than that, then that's there. When you go to Brahman, right? So all these different things, you can also look at it that way. But the ultimate one is being situated in position with the Lord. So therefore, then they have their names. So that's actual liberation, right? Then you have this so-called temporary. Then you have the heavenly planets. Then you have just pious situations. You know what I'm saying? So it's just they're all. So, you understand? This is what I mean by being able to use the words in a variety of applications. The principle will remain, but you can look at the same thing as destruction or the same thing as, what was the other one? It was liberation. Yeah, destruction or liberation. So when it's at the material tint, it's all the different forms of destruction. When it comes to the final point of liberation, therefore, it's mukti. So all that's happened is Shankaracharya has taken this word indicating going back to Godhead and used it for this interim state. So it's still within nirodha. Right? That's all that's happened. You know, it's like calling the new apartment complex swarga. You know, like that, you know. It's the same kind of principle. It's still the same old thing, but yes. Hey. Okay. Primary of text, right? You know, go to Vrindavan, you see a million of these ads of all these, you know, like that. And they're all glorifying it in these kind of terms.
Vrindavan, they have Vaikuntha also.
Oh, they have Vaikuntha also. So even going above Swarga now. Vaikuntha.
Septic tank just right outside.
Yeah, instead of it being inside.
That's the Vaikuntha element.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yes.
I saw like an advertisement for a new like complex in Vrindavan saying, live like a king in the Lord's playground. And I'm thinking, any proper devotee, why would they go for this advertisement? Because the last thing you want is to live like a king in the Lord's playground. So it wasn't done very properly.
But the point is that the Delhi Wallahs are that they're going to appreciate that.
Oh, right. Delhi Wallahs.
Yeah, because they're the ones with the money. They're the ones buying those places.
Okay, right.
The Hare Krishnas, they generally aren't buying very many places.
No?
A couple of places. Okay. Like, you know, the bulk is coming from Delhi.
Oh, okay.
And,
that's who they're talking.
Yeah, because if it wasn't for them coming, then it would just be a little village.
Okay. But, makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. But at the same time, as you know, who wrote it also doesn't know what they're talking
bad
about.
Propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just advertising. It's a
bone a piece of the doll.
They're just taking the king and king and putting it together. So.
I think it's next to Radha Golf. Well.
Radha Golf. Radha Golf.
That's a golf.
Radha Golf.
And over there.
Yeah.
Golf.
Oh, it's already
it's
there.
It's a real thing.
Yeah. Wow.
Huge place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I was going to say the next thing they need is a race course, but then just down the road there is one. It's just opened, yeah. So there's not a whole lot left. Yeah. Okay. Summary of 58. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan summarizes this anucheda as follows. Quote, the ashraya tattva, characterized by the nine beginning with sarga, is described. Even though so many subjects are covered, the Srimad Bhagavatam is really about one topic, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. Text 58. The next of the seven verses says, the source for the manifestation and annihilation of the cosmos and the cause by which these are perceived is the Supreme Fountainhead, the Absolute Truth, known as Brahman and Paramatma. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.7. So it means that the manifestation, annihilation, and also the cause by which they're perceived. Mm. Right? That's an important aspect. The word visible manifestation, abhasa, means the sending forth of material creation. And annihilation, nirodha, means the winding up. The entity from whom these processes arise and by whom they are made perceivable to the jiva's senses is the ashraya, well known as, quote, Brahman and Paramatma, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.27. Here the word thus, iti, carries the sense of features, and this implies the idea of the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, also. This we intend to fully explain later. Like, so the iti, because you're saying features, then that must be that there's more, because in Paramatma and Brahman, you're not really discussing much in features. Brahman, not so much at all. Paramatma, touch more, but fully features means it has to be Bhagavan. The whole of the Satsandarbhas is dedicated to explaining the Bhagavatam's tenth and principal theme, the Ashraya. Here, Srila Jiva Goswami only hints at the identity of the Ashraya. To define the Supreme Truth in relation to the material world as the source of its creation, maintenance, and destruction says little about the full extent of the Lord's glories, especially the opulence and attractiveness of his personality. Nonetheless, our limited modes of thinking in material life dispose us to appreciate more readily the impersonal aspect of the Supreme. In fact, the Vedanta Sutras begin by describing him this way, Janmadyasya Yata 1.2.1.1.2, that from which come the creation and other transformations of this world. In the next section, Srila Jiva Goswami gives further reasoning for the Lord being the ashraya of everything. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami's understanding of the tenth topic. The Absolute Truth is the shelter of all shelters. Who is his own shelter? 59 to 60. Okay. Okay. So then we got this. How far do we get with this now? 61
out of 63.
Oh, okay. Out of 63. Okay. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Chaitanya Gaura ki
jai.